As renewable energy capacity expands, managing the energy system effectively and in real time is critically important, as well as unlocking sufficient flexibility to meet system requirements. Electric vehicles can be a valuable source of flexibility. According to a report released by Eurelectric and EY, by 2030, there'll be an estimated 114 terawatt hours of battery capacity available for grid purposes, based on current EV uptake. To understand the mechanisms needed to unlock this potential capacity, and to delve into the key findings of the report, I spoke to Gabrielle Clark, Policy Officer on Energy Policy, Climate and Sustainability at Eurelectric, and Andrew Horsted, Global Power and Utilities Lead Analyst at EY. They shed light on strategies to overcome the key barriers to unlocking V2G and highlight the importance of creating a value proposition that all stakeholders can really buy into. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Andrew, Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about EVs in Europe and unlocking system flexibility that they can offer. So I think let's start with a figure. 114 terawatt hours of flexible capacity. That is a lot of potential. So Andrew, I'm going to start with you. How do we get to this figure, this 114 terawatt hours? And tell us a little bit more about the EV uptake in Europe at the moment.
So thanks, Pamela. It's a great question. And maybe if I can give a bit of context in terms of why we're looking at flexibility in the first place. We need to consider what's happening within our European energy market, and changes is occurring rapidly. So if I think about what's happened in the last 5 years, we've seen solar capacity has tripled. So we're now up at around 340 gigawatts. Wind has added 37% in the time frame, so over 230 gigawatts. And last year, we saw another record year for solar growth. So if we think about renewables to date, we're around sort of 47%+ or thereabouts of our total energy electricity needs coming from renewable sources to date. And if we think about clean technologies, that's north of 70%+. So from where we were to where we are today, we've made significant progress. But what is material is what's likely to happen over the coming decades. And if we think about the targets for Europe's decarbonisation programme, we need to almost 2 to 3 times increase the speed of that installation rate. So this is going to create fundamental challenges for our energy system. And as a result of that, we're going to need different ways and find different solutions in terms of managing that the system adequacy we require. We're rapidly moving to accelerating the electrification agenda. We've got data centers, we've got transportation electrification, we've got industrial electrification. All of these are creating problems for our energy system. And as a result of that, we have to try and find solutions to address the demand for energy, but also the variability of that energy. And as a result of that, the expectation is that by 2030, the requirement for flexibility is expected to double compared to 2020 levels. And even from 2030 to 2050, the expectation is that we will need to triple again the levels of flexibility that we require. So what that means is that we're going to need a whole host of different storage technologies to provide a range of solutions in order to ensure our system, you know, we can essentially manage supply and demand in real time. So demand-side flexibility is one of those key solutions that we can help to integrate renewables. We can address generation adequacy issues, balance demand and supply in real time. And bidirectional charging, also known as vehicle-to-everything or vehicle-to-X or vehicle-to-grid, is an important contribution of that demand-side flexibility toolkit that we're going to be increasingly reliant on. And if we think about it in that context, EVs, which are already abundant and rapidly growing in number, they are a readily available, scalable, and cost-effective, essentially, asset to provide some of that flexibility. So what we tried to do in our study is to look at what is the expected growth in EV penetration across Europe. What does that translate to in terms of a total battery capacity sitting within those vehicles? And how much of the capacity could we potentially tap into to provide part of the flexibility needs that our energy system will require? So that number that you refer to, or 114 terawatt hours, is based on an analysis of what we anticipate in terms of the what will be the battery electric vehicle adoption rate. So we anticipate by 2030, we're going to be see around 40 million EVs on the road, battery electric vehicles on the road, which in themselves are going to be determined by availability of the price point of the EVs, the confidence of the charging infrastructure and so forth. But it also assumes that by that period, those vehicles are all V2G compatible. So this is one of the big caveats in that number, is that it provides us a guide or a theoretical number or a value that we could capture if those vehicles have potential to provide services back to manage the grid. So we analyzed across a range of assumptions in terms of how much energy within the vehicle is likely to be needed from a mobility perspective, how much capacity is therefore left within the vehicle battery, how much of that could be deployed going forward. So that 114 terawatt hours translates to roughly around 4% of Europe's expected energy requirements by 2030. So it's equivalent to around 30 million the power requirements.
Andrew, thank you for setting the scene there. And I think you've mentioned quite a few aspects that we can delve into during this podcast. But before we do that, interesting. So V2G is part of a broader toolkit. You're definitely not saying that this is the be-all and end-all solution. But Gabriel, just to get your input on this specifically. So if we look at EV uptake at the moment, what are some of the trends that you're seeing? Because it's more than just a situation of consumers thinking, well, how expensive is this at the end of the day? I think we're seeing perhaps consumers become more engaged, and there is a change in mindset with consumers wanting to perhaps play a role in decarbonization as well. So I would assume there is quite a steady upward trend. Am I correct?
Yeah, thanks for the question. And yeah, I think, first of all, I would say that 2024, this last year, has been quite an interesting year for the EV market, also quite political for it as well. So in terms of talking about this steady upward trend, we saw a bit of a stagnation period for 2024. And that was due to a number of reasons, some of them being, of course, the subsidies being removed in some of the largest EV markets, such as Germany in 2023, and having this downward pressure on the market, as well as you'll see that just generally where we are with the long-term EV market and how it follows this long-term trend very closely to the regulation on CO2 emission standards. And so as 2025 was coming in to usher in this new target, this stagnation period right before this new 15% CO2 reduction target was going into place, it saw this natural kind of stagnation period as we were also waiting for new, more affordable models to flood the market as well in for 2025 and 2026. So in 2023, we saw that BEVs made up around 14.6%, I believe. And we saw that decline just a bit slightly in 2024 to 13.6%. So we still saw growth in the EV market, but it was a bit less than in 2023. But that being said, looking at the long-term trajectory of the market, this was not something that was necessarily that surprising, I would say. And that 2025 was already showing positive results, with January showing around BEVs already making around 15% of sales, and projections even reaching as high as BEVs making as much as 22% by the end of 2025. And then again, this is about these new models coming into the market and these new targets needing to be reached for CO2 reduction. And yeah, this is important to maintain really the long-term trajectory and uptake of the electric vehicles. As you rightfully mentioned, cost and upfront cost is definitely something that is on the average driver's mind when they're going to either stick with their internal combustion engine or switch to an EV. And right now, on average, EVs are around 2 to 3 times more expensive. So this switch in the upfront cost is something to take into account. But that's why also looking at this study, we're looking at the total cost of ownership and the annual savings that you can have on the total cost of ownership and how this can really factor into maybe the EV buyer's assessment in terms of what they're switching to, because the case for savings on the total cost of ownership are definitely there and can grow even more as we tap more into moving beyond just smart charging and the flexibility potential of smart charging, but even tapping into now vehicle to grid and bidirectional charging and potentially, yeah, making some or having some remuneration potential for the average driver.
Maybe, Pamela, I could just jump in on that. I mean, I think I echo everything that sort of Gabrielle has just said. And I think there's a combination of factors at play here. What it highlights is still the ongoing importance of regulation in terms of providing the right incentives, both in terms of the car makers, in terms of to actually invest in the vehicles and then change the powertrains. This is a proposition where we're asking consumers to change their habits. So therefore, what we're asking them to change to needs to create value for them, for the consumer. And we need to do it in a way which is really easy to access. So yes, we are seeing, and it's great that we're seeing lots of new vehicles coming to the market. And in part of the analysis, we dive into some of the makes and models which are coming down the line, and they're looking at a price point which is south of the 25,000-30,000 euro mark, which is always an entry point for that mass market. And I think that's something which is really key here. If we're going to have mass market uptake, we need to provide vehicles at a cost which the mass market can afford and adopt. And it's great that we're seeing the OEMs commit to their investment in that area. We also need to make sure that we have confidence in the charging infrastructure. And this is something else that we dived into within the report, is around looking at the significant progress that we've seen, both in terms of the numbers, the absolute numbers, but also the type of charger that is being deployed. And if you actually look at the numbers of fast chargers, we've actually seen quite significant uptake compared to previous years. You know, there's now north of 1 million public charge points available across Europe's roads. So that's a huge progress in a relatively short space of time. And of course, from the power output requirement, we're actually greater than the volume of the EVs that are on the road. So you could argue that the infrastructure is starting to manifest, and it's creating that confidence to the drivers. However, I think this price point is still the critical factor in this. And so, yes, we can reflect on the progress that we've made. But if we are going to get to these long-term targets, we must make sure that there is clear signals to both the network companies to invest in the grid, the charging infrastructure companies to invest in the infrastructure. We need the OEMs to bring the cars to market at a price point that's affordable. So it's a combination of those factors, because this is all about customer trust. This is all about convenience, and it's all around rewarding that customer for the investment that they're going to make.
Andrew, you raised some very interesting points there, and it comes down to the perceived value from the customer's perspective. Do we need to do more to generate awareness around that? Or do you think customers are becoming aware of the potential role that they could have as prosumers and some of the savings that they could tap into?
So it is a very good question. And I don't have an answer that will give an appropriate response to cover all EU27 markets, plus Norway, plus the UK, plus elsewhere, because every market is at a different starting point and is on a different trajectory. In our study, we spoke to a number of industry players across the EV ecosystem to try and understand what's happening on the ground, what's happening in their marketplace, and what's their perception of the level of awareness around just charging your vehicle at different times of the day. Is there a facility to be able to do that? Are there sufficient sort of time of use tariffs which exist, which allow consumers just to very simply just charge, provide a signal to them to charge their vehicle at a different time of the day? And I think that's a key part of this, is that when we talk about flexibility from the vehicle side, it's very easy to jump to a conclusion, go straight to vehicle to grid, which is all around how much energy is in my battery, how much can I send back to the energy system, and how much money can I make as a result of that. There is a huge potential to provide flexibility just by changing when those vehicles charge to a different point of the day, where either when the demand on the system is lower, say the off-peak period, so during the nighttime, or whether there's a price signal which says now it's a cheaper time because we have an abundance of solar or wind energy on the system, which would otherwise be curtailed. So we've got to get all of those ingredients together. And we also then need to, in order to provide the right signals, we need the appropriate, market design or tariff structures to give that signal. And at the same time, we still need to increase the levels of awareness. And what our study has identified, or certainly the conversations I had with the industry players, is that it's very checkered across Europe. There are markets which are fairly advanced, as you can imagine, countries like the UK, I would argue, because we have dedicated EV charging tariffs, there's vehicle to grid tariffs. There is a ready-made flexibility market where you can procure flexibility from those vehicles. In other markets, they're just rolling out their charging infrastructure. And so having a very basic time of use tariff is still not on their radar. So you've got to take that into consideration. So there are markets which are advanced, there are markets which are catching up, but there are other markets which are starting their EV journey.
Now, maybe I can just add, because I think, yeah, Andrew's touching on just like a number of barriers that really exist to really tapping into this potential. And yeah, of course, we're talking about firstly the consumer and the customer being at the center of it. And I think awareness is definitely one of the key parts of this, because we're asking for really a fundamental shift in terms of how you're viewing, right? First of all, your engagement with the electricity system and electricity market, and also with your transport mode. Now you're not looking at just your vehicle as just a transport mode, but you're also looking at as a potential energy asset, right? That you can make potential benefits, remuneration off of from acting and being an active participant in the flexibility market. So this is a fundamental shift that requires definitely some awareness raising. And also, as Andrew was rightfully mentioning, the incentives, the price incentives need to be there, where the signals, the price signals that are incentivizing these consumers to participate in this, because they're having these time of use tariffs that allow them to basically take advantage of when prices are lower and then sell back when the grid is congested and prices are higher, and benefit from that by offering these flexibility services through their EV. So these are definitely challenges around the consumer, I think, and changing that behavior. And that responsibility, I think, largely falls on industry stakeholders, such as the electricity sector, such as OEMs and other industry players, to provide that transparency engagement with the consumer. But also, I think that, just to touch on what Andrew was saying, that there's a difference depending on which market you're in as well, with different types of barriers. When we're talking about even a very advanced market such as Germany, but they struggle a lot with issues such as a lack of smart meters, penetration of smart meters, as well as double taxation. So that means that these price incentives, right, for feeding this electricity back to the grid as a storage unit aren't there really for the consumer if they're getting taxed twice. And as well as just some other kind of barriers such as data exchange and regulation that standardizes this and allows for really the benefits of smart charging and a vehicle to grid to really be optimized. So there's differences within each market, and they're all in one way or another a barrier to the consumer, I would say.
Gabrielle, I think if I'm considering what you're saying, and of course Andrew as well, we have the situation where there is so much potential, but there are definitely these key barriers that need to be overcome. And frankly, it's quite a complex situation. There's several different factors to be taken into account. As you say, it's different between countries as well. So how do we get the ball rolling, perhaps faster? We've come a long way in terms of infrastructure development. So is it a case of policy and policy mechanisms that are needed to guide investments? What are your thoughts on this? How do we spur action?
If I was going to sort of break this down into where we need to focus, I think there's probably, our study identified six areas which we think are absolutely critical. And I think about it in the context of, this sort of three areas which sort of focus more on the consumer angle, which deals with essentially the whole cost, the customer acceptance piece, which you've spoken about already. So, first of all, do we have the right tariff designs which actually provides an incentive and a signal for a charging event to happen at a different time of the day? Then there is the whole notion around, do we have the vehicles? Do we have the infrastructure in place? And actually, do we have the value proposition clearly articulated for different stakeholder groups? So, because obviously it's very easy to think about this in the context of maybe the domestic user, the home EV owner, but there's also a fleet angle to this. There's a lot of potential within that business community around active management of charging at the depot, as an example. So there's activity, and we need to focus around getting that value proposition right for the customer. And again, the customer could be across the fleet and across the residential, or the residential EV owner. Then there's the grid angle and the technical requirements that we need to focus in on. First of all, we need to think about the system planning. So how do we make sure that we have targeted investment within energy networks which can cater for accelerated V2G rollout? So how do we make sure that it is part of that technology stack which we spoke about right at the beginning of the conversation? Then there's another dimension to this, which is around data visibility and market integration. So how do we make sure that the communication protocols are standardized to allow the exchange of data between the different actors within the ecosystem? Because that's a really critical barrier at this moment in time. And of course, then the third, the other angle to this is how do we make sure that we have cost-reflective pricing signals that reward consumers at the moment in time where we need to draw down and require flexibility. So, and in that context, there is no one single entity or one stakeholder group who's going to be responsible for all of that. It's going to require regulation, it's going to require the car makers, it's going to require the charge point operators, the aggregators, the network companies, the fleet operators to all work together to try and solve these problems. But, and that's why this is really complicated, but it's also super interesting. And if we can unlock the potential, the value in this is fairly significant.
Gabrielle, I see you nodding as Andrew was talking there. Would you like to weigh in?
Yeah, for me, what's encapsulating everything that Andrew is saying is into maybe a three regroupings. And first, just, most importantly, being really the regulatory certainty, but in terms of implementing legislation that's already been approved and is really in its implementation transposition phase. But specifically when we're talking about, for public infrastructure, for the rollout of public charging, the affordable or alternative fuels infrastructure regulation, so AFIR. And then also when we're talking about private charging, so meeting our targets as well for pre-cabling and certain private charging that needs to be in place under EPBD, so the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. And then underlying that all as well, because when we're talking about this projected capacity, right, and battery capacity that's available for these flexibility services, this projection is also based on what we're projected for, the projection for EV uptake. So this is also means that, of course, maintaining regulatory certainty with our regulation on CO2 standards in terms of those signals that the EV uptake and these electric vehicles will actually be on the road to provide that battery capacity. And then lastly, for implementation, I would say, the electricity market design that's going to provide these kind of time of use tariffs. So these price signals that these are supposed to be offered by energy suppliers as of this year to consumers, as well as lowering the minimum bid size for the flexibility market. So lowering that down to 100 kilowatt hours for the intraday and day ahead market, which is also key for allowing these vehicles to really take part in the flexibility market by lowering those bid sizes. And then following implementation and this kind of regulatory certainty that I think really underlines everything, which I would say is one of the most important to really achieve this potential, would be these technical standards that Andrew was alluding to, when that has to do with data exchange and interoperability and making sure we're breaking down these kind of silos that we see from these traditionally legacy industries, whether that be the energy sector or the auto industry, and making sure that's really broken down across the value chain, as well as when we're talking about these technical standards. And I think Andrew has alluded to this a bit, but not every vehicle that we're talking about has even vehicle to grid capability, right? And right now, the chargers that are on the market that have this capability are mostly these direct current, so DC chargers, fast chargers, that also cost five to 10 times more than the AC slow chargers, because these AC slow chargers need this capability to be also embedded in the vehicle itself, which right now is not a standard for electric vehicles. So this is also a standard that we're also looking at that should be considered for automakers to make maybe a standard for EVs, new EVs being put on the market, to have this vehicle to grid capability embedded in them to make this more likely to be used on a wide scale. And then, lastly, I would just say this part on consumer awareness, which is really a mix between education and also providing them these price signals and kind of remuneration schemes that we've been discussing.
Focusing in on the report, Plugging into Potential, Unleashing the Untapped Flexibility of EVs, in your opinion, what was the most interesting, important finding, or the finding that you would like to emphasize that you want our listeners to take away?
Maybe I'll go first, and then Gabrielle, you can chime in with your own reflections. So one of the key asks of the study was to try and, can we articulate a value and actually put a monetary value on the size of the opportunity. So we often talk about flexibility from a grid perspective, and we've obviously spoken at length today already around creating a value proposition for the consumer. But you know, what is the value proposition? Can we put a number, a monetary value on that? And that was really core to the analysis that underpins the within the study. And so what we did is we looked at three different vehicle segments. So we looked at the compact vehicle, the family vehicle, and the large or SUV vehicle segment. And then we looked at six key markets. So we looked at the UK, we looked at Germany, we looked at France, we looked at the Netherlands, we looked at Sweden, and we looked at Spain. We then looked at the classic total cost of ownership calculation. So if I currently own a petrol vehicle, a diesel vehicle today, if I'm buying an EV equivalent, what is the monetary value I can save over the lifetime of that ownership? We then layered on the potential for, if I charge my vehicle at a different time of the day and I can benefit from different energy prices, what's the potential saving from that? So just as an example, just from that, if we look at the compact vehicle market, so the vehicle segment which is most akin to the mass market, so therefore it's quite an important market to focus in on. From a UK perspective, you're saving potentially on an annual basis around 200 euros per annum, but just by changing when you charge your vehicle to a different time of the day. In the Netherlands, you're looking at around 60 euros saving. In Spain, it's around 110 euros. So each market is very different, obviously a reflection of the different price points within the actual cost of electricity within those markets, as an example. Then we wanted to say, if I actually then also store energy in the vehicle battery and then I have the potential to sell some of that energy back into to the grid, how much extra money could I save? Or what's the potential reward? So if I take the UK as an example, again, looking at the compact vehicle market, you're potentially looking anywhere between 650 and 700 euros additional saving on top of the 200 saving you've already made from charging your vehicle a different part of the day. In Spain, you're looking at around sort of 550 to 600 euros savings. Again, very different across different markets. So if we look at the combined total cost of ownership, which incorporates the price point of the vehicle relative to an ICE equivalent, and then I layer on the cost of the potential savings from flexible charging and also sharing energy back to the grid and being rewarded for that, you're looking at a potential monetary saving of north of 1200 euros per annum, which materially changes the total cost of ownership and business proposition for an electric vehicle. So it takes this notion of the EV is expensive today, and because I have to make an upfront investment, but if I can get rewarded for it and actually save money on the cost of the energy that I'm using to fuel my vehicle, that significantly improves the value proposition. And that was, for me, is fairly revealing in terms of the analysis, but not only the range of price saving or the cost, the savings you can generate across different markets, but also how consistent that was when we tested those numbers with different stakeholders across the peer groups and the review groups. I don't know, Gabrielle, what your observations were from your own, the members that you work with.
I think that Andrew is touching on pretty much one of the most important findings of the report. It was just this kind of dual value proposition that we really wanted to hone in on, and just that to see that, okay, when we're talking about, of course, flexibility, it's really easier to understand in the context, I think, when we're talking from the grid operator's perspective and the energy system perspective. And so I think really monetizing that and putting a number on that for the average consumer and EV driver of, okay, what does that actually look like though for you, right? What's in it for me? And why should I care about flexibility to the grid? Of course, maybe we all would like to adhere to our own principles and decarbonization. And that's also why we first would want to switch maybe to an electric vehicle. But when it comes to allowing for these charging platforms to also have some type of say over how and when your EV is charging and what that looks like and participating in the electricity market and becoming more of an active participant, as we've said, we need to also make it understandable and make it attractive to the consumer. And I think putting that financial value and those into a savings from the total cost of ownership, as Andrew just mentioned, for each of those three segments for six of the markets. I think that was, yeah, a good way to really flesh that out.
Andrew, Gabriella, I feel like we've really just touched the surface of the report. It's very comprehensive and there's a lot of detail, but unfortunately we have run out of time. Do you have any final concluding remarks before we finish up? Andrew?
We need to recognize that we're at the start of a journey. So I think we tend to forget that the EV transition is still fairly nascent, but it's part of a broader system change which is happening across Europe and across other markets. I think we've looked at the market, how the market is evolving in our previous studies, which we've collaborated on with Euroelectric, and I'm sure we'll continue to do so going forward. We still remain very optimistic around the trajectory of travel, but what is increasingly evident is that we've got to get that value proposition correct. Those who have made the transition to an electric vehicle have done so already, and they've done that for a variety of reasons. Either they're interested in it, they like new innovation, they want to try new things out. Where we're going to get scale is if we can really access and penetrate the mass market. So it's convincing yourself, Pamela, as a non-EV owner, to go and to make your next vehicle an EV purchase. So how do we do that? What's going to convince you to make that decision? I think that's what we within the industry need to figure out. This is a sizable investment. It's going to require a lot of things to be in place, but we've got to make it fun as well. Driving an EV is great fun. They're easy to drive. The experience is great. I'm an EV owner myself. I have very limited issues with it. In fact, I've had zero issues in terms of charging. Range anxiety is an urban myth in my view in that regard, because you just factor it into your schedule. The car does it for you. It tells you when you need to charge and it routes you to the charge point. It's fairly straightforward. We just need to convince the mass market that there's value in the transition, and also the most important thing is that you can actually save money.
Gabrielle, would you like to bring this into land?
Yeah, no, I would just echo really what Andrew said, that we are at the start of a journey and for mass market adoption for EVs, and also really tapping into the flexibility potential, right? And just incorporating demand side flexibility and distributed energy resources in general into our energy system. This is something that's really also at the start of the journey, and I think that we've identified numerous challenges just in this call and in the report. It does so the same. And really it's identifying these challenges and getting it right and setting these standards so that, yeah, all EV owners in Europe can really take advantage of these benefits. And it's not just going to be localized in certain markets, and that we can really get those standards correct and really break down those barriers across Europe so that all electric vehicle drivers can really take advantage of these financial benefits that also benefit, of course, our energy system.
Well said. Thank you, Gabrielle. Thank you, Andrew. It has been a pleasure to speak with you today. And to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions Podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.